The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
160,
which means we are close to 200. And by that, I mean it's like a year away.
I can't believe it, though. 160.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who has downloaded, who has supported, who's told a friend, told complete strangers, because this continues to grow because of you.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the suggestions that you guys have passed our way as to people's whose stories you wanted to hear.
All right. So our guest for this week, it's kind of the second time that we've done something similar to this.
Yeah. Husband, wife, country music side of things, and a phenomenal story.
All right. Kim Campbell. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
So far, so good.
Good, thank you.
We like to ask the skill testing question, Kim, because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
Okay, I'm Kim Campbell, and I was raised in North Carolina, lived on the coast, and went to East Carolina University, majored in dance, and became a Broadway dancer, danced at Radio City Music Hall for the Rockettes, and that's where I met my husband.
Was dance always a big part of your life?
It was. I started dancing in high school and fell in love with it. And my teacher in high school was this beautiful, beautiful woman named Susan Sledge. And she was, in the Miss North Carolina pageant and all of that. And she drove a Corvette. And I said, I want to be like that. So I realized I had an aptitude for it. And I majored in dance in college and then auditioned, got, my job dancing with the Rockettes at Radio City Music Hall. And I still dance today. I dance 3 or 4 times a week at Nashville Ballet. I'm 61, and it's been a lifetime love, and it's very therapeutic, for just keeping a sense of well-being and fighting depression, because I suffered a lot of depression, when my husband got so ill. But it's really almost a spiritual thing for me to dance, especially ballet. I actually pray and thank God for all my blessings, when I'm doing my warm-up, so...
I love that. I hope I can still be active when I'm in my 60s. Even now, getting out of bed sometimes is a struggle.
I know it is for all of us. Got to keep fighting.
Yes. Well, I know you talk a lot about your faith. When did you really start to make that faith, more than just like a cultural thing, but following Jesus was something that you were choosing to do?
Well, I was raised, my mom always took me to church and went to Vacation Bible School. And I just fell in love with Jesus as a child. And they used to call me the little missionary because I was always inviting my friends to go to church with me. And then, as I grew, I wanted to be an example to my friends in high school. But then I kind of fell into becoming more of a carnal Christian, trying to show everybody you could be cool and be a Christian,
Mm-hmm.
I still had, pretty good values, but I think I was compromising in many areas. But when I met my husband and realized that he had so many challenges, with alcohol addiction and drug addiction, I straightened up in order to help him. And when I did, I realized that I really wasn't living the life I should be living. And I think it's easier for somebody who's really struggling on the bottom to find God, because they are desperate. They realize they have to reach up, look to God for help. But when you're kind of lukewarm and mediocre in your faith, then I think that's actually a more dangerous place. Jesus said, you're neither hot nor cold. You make me want to throw up, in the book of Revelation. So I think I was kind of living life dangerously in mediocrity. So helping Glenn helped me as well.
I want to get to the night when you first met Glenn, but I want to go back just a little bit with regards to your dancing and your dancing career as we're leading up to it. Was being a part of the Rockettes, was that kind of the goal? Was that where you wanted to be? Or was it to dance, theater or lyrical, or because there's so many different styles?
Yeah, I was mostly a jazz dancer, but ballet is, the foundation for all dance forms. But I wanted to be a Broadway dancer because I also sang, And I loved being in musicals. That was kind of my goal. And I got to do that. I was in the Broadway version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And I did Music Man while I was in New York. So I got to do everything I wanted to do. And then I met my husband and was able to raise a family and keep dancing the rest of my life. So it all worked out just like I wanted it.
Well, and so let's talk about the night that you meet your husband. Now, I know there are people who say that they pray for their spouse all the time, that they want to, you know, there's something specific that they want. Was there prayers that you would pray before you ended up meeting Glenn?
Well, it's funny because, as I mentioned, I was in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I had just finished that show and started the Radio City show. And I was walking down the street with two of my girlfriends in New York who had danced with me in Snow White. So we had fairy tales on our minds, you know. We were kind of walking down the street, praying for God to send us the right husband. And so one of my friends said, "Dear God, please send me my knight in shining armor." And the other one said, "Dear God, please send me my Prince Charming." And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, "Dear God, please send me a good-looking Christian, Southern millionaire that I can be in love with, and he can be in love with me." And then 2 weeks later, I got fixed up on a blind date with Glenn Campbell, and there I was having dinner with a good-looking Christian, Southern millionaire. Later on that night, I would realize I should have added a few more things to that prayer.
Yeah.
Like, who's not an alcoholic, who's not addicted to drugs, because I had a tiger by the tail.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, your guys' love story is quite phenomenal. But leading up to that blind date, I know, like, I've been on them before, and it's one of those things where you're just thinking, what have my friends got me into? What were you thinking about heading into this blind date?
Well, the blind date was to go out with someone in the band, I didn't know who, to see James Taylor perform. And so my mind was on James Taylor, you know. I love James Taylor. And then I found out right before I met him that it was going to be Glenn Campbell. And I didn't know much about him at all. I knew that he was a singer. You know what? It was back in the day before you had Google. So I couldn't just get on the internet and try to find out about him. But later on, it all came back to me, you know, that he was a major recording artist, had his own TV show, and starred in the movie True Grit with John Wayne. I mean, he had an incredible career.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't know, you know, how old he was or anything. But when I met him, when I looked at him for the first time, he was so good looking. I could not believe it. And he was 45 at the time, but he didn't look it. You know, he's always been very youthful looking and healthy and physically fit, and he was just gorgeous. So it was love at first sight for, I think both of us, you know.
But that first date also had a little bit of another reveal to what could be coming down the road with that relationship, right?
Right, right. We went out, we saw James Taylor, and then he got really, really drunk and was made sexual advances toward me, but not in a physical way, just... But, I mean, he was very, very drunk. But I left, and I went home, and he called me that night and apologized and asked for a second chance. And so we started dating.
You already have this amazing career, and then you meet this guy who also has this phenomenal music and acting career and everything else. Was the dating, I mean, I'm trying to think about in that time when you guys met, was the dating... Was it everything that you had thought that it was going to be? Was it difficult? Because, I mean, we don't have the internet. We don't have the cell phones and that like we do now.
Well, I was only 22 years old. So I was very inexperienced with dating anyone with any maturity whatsoever. I dated surfers and struggling actors and things like that. So I'd never been out with a real established man before. And it was just kind of like a fairy tale. He took me to fabulous restaurants and to shows, and then he asked me to come and see his show in Philadelphia and sent a limo for me. And then that's when my eyes were opened to, oh my goodness, this man is an icon. I had no idea.
Yeah.
he was a perfect gentleman to me when we started dating after the first night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fell in love quickly. We were engaged within, you know, a very short time, less than a year. He asked me to marry him. And I knew that, you know, he was the one I wanted to be married to the rest of my life. He was a great man. He was so kind and sweet and gentle, and until he started drinking, and then it was a different person. So I struggled with that, you know, throughout the first few years of our marriage, is trying to bring him back to who God really had crafted him to be. And it took a lot of time. We found a church because we wanted to get married in a church. He was a believer. He just, you know, he had this addiction, this disease that he had developed over the years, and he had, you know, left his Christian roots and gotten swallowed up by Hollywood and all the craziness during that time period with cocaine. And so he was just kind of drowning in that condition. Finding a church, moving to Phoenix, getting a different set of friends helped us get on the right path and start our marriage off on the right foot. And it was a struggle. It took some time and a lot of patience and a lot of prayer. But God was so faithful and delivered him from all of that. And he became the best husband and father I could have ever hoped for.
How was your family when you told them, yeah, this guy I just met less than a year ago, we're going to get married? Was your family supportive?
When I first started dating Glenn, I called my dad. Because the more I found out about Glenn, the more concerned I became. So I called my dad and I said, Dad, I met this guy. I'm dating this guy. He's 22 years older than me. He's been married 3 times. He has 5 children. One is older than me and one is a baby. Do you think that's okay? And he was silent for a few minutes, and then he said, well, who is it? And I said, it's Glenn Campbell. He said, Glenn Campbell, the entertainer? And I said, yes. He thought about it, and he said, it's fine. It's just fine. Age is just a number. So I got my dad's blessing. And then, like I said, it wasn't long. It was probably 6 months or less that we till we were engaged. And we went down to visit my mom. He wanted to meet my family. So they were in shock, I think. Mm-hmm. That I was bringing home Glenn Campbell. And he was so sweet to them. They loved him. It all worked out great. He took me to meet his family in Arkansas. And they're a big, huge, loving family. And they were really, really glad for him to bring me back, because they knew that I was going to be a strong anchor for him to help him overcome the, you know, battles he was facing.
You were mentioning the age gap. You're mentioning the fact that he was previously married. Were you going into this at all? I mean, I know that you were younger, but was it, because I know that there are some times you hear, oh, I can change that person. I can change who they are. Or I can, you know, change their life around. Did you think that as you guys were starting your relationship?
Yes, I did. But it wasn't really thinking that I could change that. When we had our first date, when they brought our food to the table, he bowed his head and said a prayer. And I said, are you a Christian? And he said, yes, I am. And I said, I am too. And, you know, like I said, I prayed for a good-looking Christian, so I'm a millionaire. So I'm like, God is answering my prayer. God has brought us together, and he is a believer. So I know that God's going to work all this together for good. And so it's really my faith that God would change him, and I was there to support that. And I just kept praying and believing. And I knew that there was a spiritual battle over Glenn going on in the, you know, the spirit world over Glenn, because it was so obvious that something was trying to destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew if I left that he would probably die. He had just been through so much. He was just in such agony from failed marriages and different things that he had been through, that I knew that if I left, he would die. And I wasn't going to let Satan have the victory over him or me. But at some point, I realized I had to reach out for help. And so I did. I called some of his friends. I called, you know, some of the deacons in the church and the pastor, and we talked about it, and they started, you know, intervening and supporting the very things that I was telling Glenn about his drinking. It took some time. It was hard.
It was also in a day and age, too, where addictions was looked at quite differently than what it is now. Now we recognize, you know, addictions as a disease. Then there's that stigma attached to it, you know, especially, you know, when you were going through this. Did you find that people were more inclined to maybe advise you to leave instead of stay?
No one ever advised me to leave. I think they were very thankful that I was there, and they were there, too. His friends were, everyone was pulling for him. Everybody loved him that knew the old Glenn. I think the hardest thing in that battle is to help the one who's suffering the addiction or the disease to face what they're dealing with, because denial is just, it's the biggest obstacle. It's a big stronghold. And so I tape recorded Glenn when he was on a rant yelling at his mother. It was just horrible that he loved his mother. Why would he treat her that way? But like I said, he was a totally different person when he was drinking. Some people are happy drunks. Some people are mean drunks, nasty drunks. You know, alcohol just changed him for the worst. Mm. So I tape recorded him. And then the next day when he was sober, I laid the tape recorder on the bed and I said, I think you need to listen to this. And then I walked out of the room because I knew that curiosity would get him. And if I stayed there and he started to listen to it, he'd be mad and maybe throw it against the wall or break it or something. But if I left, that he would listen to it. And he did. And he said it really did, you know, open up his eyes to how he was actually behaving. Because I could stand there and tell him the next day, you did this, you did that. And he would deny it. No, I did not. I would never say that. You know, but when you hear it on tape, we didn't have iPhones back then, you know,
yeah.
I had to go to some trouble to get it recorded. But today it'd be really easy. And I think you've seen that on television, people using their iPhones to record somebody doing something horrible to wake them up and make them realize what they're doing or to shame them. I don't think that's good to use it to shame someone. Just privately, it was very useful for me and for Glenn.
But I mean, he was able to face his demons. He was able to work through that. And I mean, you guys had such an incredible marriage. But part of that, and at some point, he is then dealing with Alzheimer's. At what point did you realize that there was something wrong?
Well, it's so gradual. It's hard to know. And, you know, he's a celebrity. He's a little bit eccentric about certain things. He's used to having things done for him all the time. I thought, well, maybe it's that. Like, one night, we were laying in bed sleeping. We were both asleep. And all of a sudden, he waked me up and he said, I'm cold. And I looked down and he didn't have any covers on. And I'm like, well, pull your covers up. And I just kind of frustrated, I sat up in bed and covered him up. And I thought, boy, he has been a star for too long. He wants me to do everything for him. But what when I found out that he had Alzheimer's, then I realized he was cold, but he didn't know what to do about it. So all of a sudden, the crazy things that you didn't understand or you found irritating, all of a sudden they made sense. You know, he's repeating himself a lot. He couldn't keep his schedule straight. Those are early signs, some anxiety, some depression. Then he was shadowing me everywhere. He didn't want me out of his sight. He was very clingy. And OCD, you know, lots of different manifestations started to happen. So we went to the neurologist and, you know, ran a bunch of tests. In 2009, he was diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment. And the doctor said, well, you know, sometimes this indicates that, you know, he may have Alzheimer's, but not always. So back then in 2009, there was no way to give a positive diagnosis of Alzheimer's except through the process of elimination. So we ran a bunch of tests. He said, just take him home and continue living your life and come back, you know, every year and let's see if this is progressing. So by 2011, we ran all the same tests and he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at that point. And that was absolutely terrifying. I really didn't know anything about it. I had a million questions. My first one, of course, was, is it fatal? And shockingly, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. That frightened me. And then Well, how many years does he have? Well, 4 to 8 years generally from the time of diagnosis, but some people can have it longer, like 20 years. I have a friend, Meryl Comer, who took care of her husband for 22 years with Alzheimer's.
Oh.
And it was tough. The last 8 years, he was bedridden. Her mother got it, so then she was taking care of her mother and her husband in their home. It financially devastated her. He was combative, like Glenn was combative. That's another thing people don't realize about Alzheimer's, that many of them become violent or combative. It makes it very difficult to be a caregiver. Meryl had her teeth knocked out by her husband. Glenn became combative. So just at some point, our doctor told me, you know, I can't believe you're still trying to do this at home. And I had never considered doing it any other way, you know. I didn't know that there were memory care communities that specialized in, you know, people with dementia. So when I found out and I visited a few, I decided to give it a try. And it became such a blessing. I always say, I did not put my husband in a home. I did not place my husband in a facility. Our family joined a memory care community. It was my community. And then I was there with other people, other families going through the same journey. We laughed together, cried together, prayed together, and supported each other through this long, long goodbye, this long journey. And it became such a blessing, and it helped me go back to being wife rather than just being the caregiver. So many people feel so guilty if they even consider a long-term care situation, but some of that is just born out of ignorance and old stereotypes of nursing homes and people, you know, and slumped over in wheelchairs and lined up down the hall. And there are places like that that are scary and terrifying, but there are many, many great places, and like I said, especially designed for memory care, that are vibrant communities with music therapists, dance therapists, and horticulture therapists, and pets, and art, and faith, and music. It's a thriving community.
How did your faith carry you through this time?
Well, I was severely depressed. It's just horrifying and so sad to see your loved ones slipping away and not remembering who they are, not remembering who you are, who your kids are. And, you know, I lost my husband. You lose him twice. I lost him when he lost his memory, and then I lost him physically many years later. But I was struggling with depression, but every morning I would wake up and I would make a choice. You know, I was thank God for my blessings. I asked God to make me be a blessing to others. And I just tried to choose to be happy. I chose to smile. You know, even the physical act of smiling works on your spirit. And I don't know how to explain it, but it helps, you know, if you stand up straight instead of leaning over, if you smile instead of frowning, you're controlling your physicality helps control your happiness, your emotions, and your spirit. So it was a conscious effort and a conscious choice to help myself overcome my depression and my sadness. And then I started a blog called careliving.org. to encourage other caregivers to care for themselves while they care for the ones they love. And my website was only positive, humorous messages. You know, there was no pity party or complaining. You know, the sadness and the grief, that's a given. But we needed to inspire each other and to see the glass half full instead of half empty. And so I started that online blog, and it seemed like it helped a lot of people. I've kind of put it on hold for a while I was writing the book, but I'm planning to, you know, get reactivated soon and try to continue that mission.
What has the reaction been from others then who are feeling the same way? Because a lot of times the Alzheimer's community feels so lost and they don't know where to turn.
That's right. I got so many letters of how stories helped encourage them and brighten their day. You know, if you can get just take it day by day, get through each day with a little bit more joy and happiness, it helps you not become the second victim of the disease, because depression can cause you to be ill. You're more likely to develop Alzheimer's and dementia yourself if you're, you know, living with depression for years. You know, the Bible says a merry heart is like good medicine. And I believe that's true. So I looked at a lot of other caregiver websites, and there's lots of good information out there, but they're really kind of, a lot of them are clinical and cold and not very uplifting. So mine was just centered more on positivity.
You had said that the blog kind of took a backseat because you were writing a book, which is set to release, and Gentle on My Mind, and In Sickness and in Health with Glenn Campbell. Why decide to write the book?
Well, while we were traveling, haven't mentioned yet that when Glenn was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, his producer, Julian Raymond, filmmaker James Peach, who did the movie Walk the Line with Johnny Cash, Johnny Cash, said he travel with us and document Glenn's goodbye tour. The other documentary is about Alzheimer's, and they said it's too sad and depressing and didn't want to watch it. But when they met Glenn, he was so funny and so talented, and music is like the very last thing to go. So his musical skills were still intact. He was, you know, one of the best guitar players in the world.
Yeah.
So they decided, well, we'll go out for a 5-week tour with you and document the film. Now, 5 weeks turned into almost 2 years of touring, 151 shows. So while we were doing the tour, I kept a journal of things that Glenn would say to me that I just never wanted to forget. It was so heavy. When he walked on stage, he was Glenn Campbell. When he was off stage and I was taking care of him in the hotel room, I was seeing all the struggle that he was going through with Alzheimer's, and it was challenging to take care of him and to keep him focused and on track and happy and support him so that he could continue doing his shows and have the strength and, you know, rest that he needed. So the last thing I wanted to do is sit down and journal every single night about what I had just been through that day. But I selectively, you know, when something really important or meaningful or a moment that I wanted to treasure the rest of my life and I was fearful that I would forget it, I would write those things down. Mm. And when he entered the late stages of Alzheimer's and we ended up joining a memory care community, I had a little more time, you know, not only for my own recollection, but for my children and for the world to really know what we went through. People had told us that when our film came out, they felt like Alzheimer's was kind of swept under the rugs and kept in the shadows. It was something no one wanted to talk about. It was embarrassing. Their family members and friends didn't know what they were going through as caregivers or as a family dealing with that disease. So when I realized how much it meant, 5.6 million people at the time, and actually it was the 15 million caregivers at the time, I decided to tell the rest of the story with my book.
Was there specific things that you wanted to make sure that you did share? Was there things that you wanted to leave out? Like, where was your thought process when doing this?
I don't think, for the most part, that many people have talked about the combativeness, so I wanted to shine a light on that, because I want people to realize what caregivers, what families are going through trying to care for someone with Alzheimer's in their home, how hard it is and how potentially dangerous it is. So I wanted that to be included, but I tried to be careful to preserve Glenn's in doing so. And then the bathroom issues I included in the book, because that's also a big part of caring for someone with this disease when they forget what a toilet is and they decide they don't want to shower anymore and they'll fight you if you try to change their clothes. You know, those were things most people don't want to talk about because you're all about protecting your loved one and their dignity, privacy. But I think at some point, people need to be aware of what this disease really does to a person and to the family. I talk about how my daughter was 7 years old, still living at home. It really stunted all my children about 10 years out of their life and their growth and development into adulthood and starting their own careers and forming families of their own, because we were all so focused on Glenn and taking care of him. And also we're focused on my, our children were also focused on taking care of me because they saw how hard it was for me, and it broke their heart what I was going through. Alzheimer's affects the entire family. But it, the good thing was, is that it brought us together as a close-knit family, and we were able in the earlier stages to celebrate Glenn's life with him while he was, you know, in the early middle stages, you still know what's going on, and he understood and appreciated all the attention and the tributes that were done to him, and it was his glory time, and he enjoyed every minute of performing and the award shows. He got a lifetime achievement, and he was able to enjoy that. So I was so thankful that people honored him while he was cognizant, you know, enough to receive it.
You have the unique experience of being able to do a documentary and the book. When you reflect over your life, were there any why me moments that really stand out to you?
I think when the doctor used the A word, Alzheimer's, and I started learning about that disease, I started thinking, why me? You know, there's no real answer for that. You just have to trust that God, whatever happens, you want to use to his glory and pray that it serves his purposes and trust him as you go through it. It is, a why question that sometimes there just aren't any answers for. You know, I thought of Job a lot. Though he slay me, yet will I praise him. There are some points in your life where you just don't have to understand. You just have to trust and follow and try your best to do good while you go through it. And that's what I did.
CareLiving.org. You can also read A Remarkable Story and a Journey and Gentle on My Mind. Kim Campbell, we appreciate you for taking some time and sharing your heart.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And a big thanks again to Kim for taking some time telling us not only about her life, but her husband's life as well.
Mm-hmm.
You could download on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. We want you to tell friends and tell family.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully her story will encourage you or someone you know. I know a lot of people dealing with some of the things that she dealt with.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have her as a resource and her website. So again, check it out wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
And of course, you can always go to faithstrongtoday.com.